The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck. The Blaze Radio Network.
Progressivism is a disease, I think. It's a disease of the mind that once it takes hold, it's over for you. Canada, I believe, is terminally ill with progressivism now. The U.S. prognosis is really a critical condition ourselves. Canada's Senate approved changing a line in their English version of their national anthem, O Canada. They wanted to make it gender neutral. The second line of the anthem will now be true patriot love in all of us command, rather than the oppressive and insanely offensive old version, true patriot love in all thy sons command. Oh my gosh. So now that their anthem isn't sexist anymore, and I am not kidding you, in Sweden, the lions, okay, on their shield, I'm trying to think of a way to say this, the lions on their shield, their crest of their country, which is I don't know how many centuries old, they have these lions on the shield, and it's easy to paint. It's harder to do it with sculpture, but they actually did it. They carved, they went and they painted over, or they took a chisel and knocked the genitals off of all of the lions because women said it was oppressive. Look it up. Canadians, now that you're not sexist anymore, feel free to sing your national anthem at any time. Somehow I doubt that the Canadian senators checked with the people, because that's not the way progressives operate. They just do it. Most Canadians, I would bet, preferred leaving the anthem alone. You know, they've had a song that way for over a century. Nobody is dying because of sexism over the stupid national anthem. This is why we didn't have a national anthem until FDR. Canadian feminist author Margaret Atwood was one of the people behind this effort. Now, she wrote the novel The Handmaid's Tale. You know, you can look that one up for insight into her feelings on tradition and faith and, you know, conservatives. She's very, very subtle. But I will tell you, I've defended her recently because she said enough of the Me Too movement. This is getting dangerous. Even she has some common sense. She's the one that, you know, got them to remove this offensive line. This is the dark side of progressivism everywhere. It presumes to know what is best for you. But it's always the agenda of a very few, forced on the majority. Sometimes the agenda or feelings of just one individual. That's when it becomes a dictatorship. But that's where everybody is headed. I mean, the world over. Progressivism claims to say, we're going, what? We're more free. Are we? We're more free now because you're forcing us to live a life that you agree with. You're forcing me to say the things that I may not agree with. That's more free. Yes, we're more free and more healthy. That's what brings Michelle Obama dictating what your local school, what your cafeteria has to serve. Or a mother in Webster Parish, Louisiana, who got student-led prayer banned from her daughter's high school. Wasn't a problem with anybody. It was a problem with her. Well, now you can't do it. Respect for tradition as a stabilizing, enriching agent in society is one of the key diverging points of the left and the right in the U.S. And decades of progressivism chipping away at the things like religion, the flag, the Constitution, patriotism in general, all the way to the last president's apology tour. It has created an enormous backlash from heartland Americans on both the left and the right, to the point where a whole section of Trump's State of the Union speech was a lecture on respecting the flag, respecting the anthem, respecting the motto, respecting our traditions. It's sad that we have sunk so low that the State of Union has to be turned into a stinking prep rally. Nothing like going to those pep rallies. And we did it. We were USA. We USA. USA. Go Bulldogs. We were a pep rally. That's it. It's easy to laugh at the Canadians for wimping out on the national anthem. But look out. Progressivism is a persistent and progressive disease. Don't think that it can't happen here.
It's Monday, February 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, last hour I talked a little bit about arrogance. Self-hating egomaniacs. And we either believe the worst in ourselves, or we believe that we are there's nothing can conquer us. As people, we're either the best or the worst. And sometimes that combination gets really dangerous when the worst people begin to believe they're the best. And quite honestly, it usually happens because they want to fit in. Individuals want to fit into a group. It's really hard not to be popular. I mean, it's so much easier. It really is. It's so much easier to be popular. Just go along with the crowd. What? Just go along with the crowd. Standing up for something, standing against something, that's really difficult. And you would think that, you know, the people who have been forced to live their life in a closet for whatever reason, you would think that they would be the first to say, hey, let's not shove other people in the closet. You would think that with the arrogance of the press, that they would remember what made them arrogant. It was their successes. Okay. What were your successes? Well, we exposed what? You exposed what? You exposed people of going wrong. But here's what the press believes. They expose a party for going wrong. They expose one ideology for going wrong. To watch the press bend over backwards over something that is really quite simple. And when I say press, I mean press on both sides. I heard people on the right say that this whole thing needs to be dismissed. There's nothing to Carter Page. There's nothing to Flynn. There's nothing to Manafort. Hold on just a second. Wait a minute. I don't get that from that memo. What I get from that memo is the government has gone wrong. What I get from the memo, if it is accurate, is that the government has become so arrogant, and they are so in bed with the press and the left that they believe that they can get away with anything, that they can go to a FISA court, a secret court, and leave really important things out, and no one will care. And the press is so arrogant that they just don't think that their side could ever do it. They're so blind. Have they watched their own movie, The Washington Post? If you haven't seen that movie, you should. It's really good. And it's really, I think it's really fair. The Tom Hanks character is there like, holy cow, Jack Kennedy. I thought Jack Kennedy was a friend. No, he wasn't a friend. As it points out in the movie, he was keeping the people that could make his life and excuse him of a lot of things very close. That's what happened, Bill Bradley. That's what happened. And he figured that out in the movie. But apparently the people in the press don't get that. Why? Because they have an agenda. So the Washington Post, they expose all the president's men. They expose Watergate. And what was Watergate? Watergate was not about a break-in. It was about spying on your competition and then using that information and trying to twist it and use it in the press. Then, after the breakout, the break-in was discovered, then it was about the president instructing the FBI and Justice Department to go rogue and start to use resources to obstruct justice to make sure that this was all covered up. It was the cover-up that was the problem. Now, I don't know about you, but boy, man, a lot of this sounds familiar. What is this really about? It's about Russia trying to get information and then using that information in the press to affect the society, to get us all to not believe in the Democrats or the Republicans and to start fighting against each other. And did the FBI and the DOJ do exactly what they were doing in Watergate? Now, if you listen to any of the pundits this weekend, absolutely not. That's not possible. How could you possibly say that? Well, I don't know. It's happened before. What makes you so sure it's not happening now? I mean, I want the facts. I don't want all of this. I don't want people drawing conclusions on what's true because I don't know what's true yet. But I know it's true in the past. Our founders knew the First Amendment had to be protected. But that halo of justice that the press gets, man, it's a little tarnished. Let's just put this in the best terms. Journalists, even the very best, are human. In 1980, the same Washington Post, with the same editor, Ben Bradley, he wanted to expand the readership of the Post into the black community. And so the paper made an effort to hire more minority journalists. One of them, her name was Janet Cook. She was a black female reporter from Ohio. She was an aggressive reporter. She was a good writer. She was a fast rising star. The Washington Post was in its heyday, and it had a very competitive environment. And she really wanted to break a big story and win a Pulitzer Prize. So she went. She was asked to write a story about DC's growing heroin problem, and she thought, this is great. I'm going to win a Pulitzer on this one. So she went into the inner city of DC. She went to the places where heroin, the epidemic at the time, was the worst. And she learned that she was, you know, that there the children were heroin addicts, and she was appalled by this. And then she found a little boy, 8 years old, heroin addict. His name was Jimmy. And she knew she had her hook. She could see the Pulitzer. She wrote her feature story called Jimmy's World. And it blew away all of the editors at the Post. Bob Woodward, who is then the assistant managing editor, he's the guy who said, this has got to be a front page story. Quoting, Jimmy is an 8-year-old and a third generation heroin addict. Precocious little boy with sandy hair, velvety brown eyes, and needle marks freckling the baby smooth skin of his thin brown arms. He nestles in a large beige reclining chair in the living room of his comfortably furnished home in southeast Washington. There's almost a cherubic expression on his small round face as he talks about life and clothes and money, the Baltimore O's, and heroin. He's been addicted since the age of 5. The readers were hooked and appalled and saddened. The mayor's office instructed the police, we've got to get this boy medical treatment. But Jimmy had disappeared, gone underground. No one knew where he was. Cook said, Ben, you don't understand. I promised them anonymity. I promised them that this wouldn't happen, and now it has, and they've gotten out. Also, Mom's boyfriend had threatened, you know, the boy's life if they discovered his whereabouts, because he's not going to prison. People were even more outraged now what was going to happen to Jimmy. A few months later, Cook had her dream. She won her Pulitzer Prize for feature writing. She had to submit some autobiographical information to the prize committee, but there was a slight snag there. The committee contacted the Post when they couldn't verify that Cook had graduated from Vassar College, magna cum laude. Turns out she only attended Vassar her freshman year. She actually graduated from the University of Toledo with a BA degree, not with a master's degree, as she told the Pulitzer Committee. So they called her in for an explanation. Unfortunately for her, the Washington Post had some real problems, and they knew they were brewing here because her resume lies were the least of her lies. After hours of grilling, she finally confessed that Jimmy's world was entirely made up. The little sandy brown-haired boy with big, beautiful eyes, needle marks on his arms. None of that was true. So here's the Washington Post, the paper that uncovered Watergate, the biggest political scandal in American history. They failed to even vet her resume. It was published it published a front page Pulitzer Prize winning feature story that was 100% made up, and nobody caught it. Well, that can't happen. How could the same place produce a golden standard of journalism during Watergate and the worst case scenario of journalism with Jimmy's world? The answer is we're all human. We're all human. Remarkably, neither Ben Bradley or Bob Woodward resigned over the incident. This is a different time. And maybe all the president's men halo, maybe that helped save them. I tell you this story not to say, see, it's all fake news, because it's not. We have to get past this idea that one side of the aisle's news is always false. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's true in the newspapers. Sometimes it's true about the journalists. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's true about the government. Sometimes it's not. But we know this. If there isn't someone standing guard that says, you know what, I'm going to vet that. You know, hang on just a second. I'm just not going to go, you're my friend and I love you and everything, but I got to do my job. Something's not right here. Journalists, do your damn job. And America will be a better place for it.
Glenn Beck.